This is Buccaneers Total Access with the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Greg Schiano.
Our team will be built around a humble, unselfish attitude of sacrifice.
Brought to you by International Diamond Center, where you'll find better selection and value guaranteed. Now your host, TJ Reeves.
And we come in on this Monday night after the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with yet another wild game with the Atlanta Falcons. It ends up being 24-23 in favor of the visitors, and we obviously have plenty to go over and to break down and to talk about here tonight on the program. And you know, this was a game where the Bucs came in on a four-game win streak. The build-up, obviously, that you were looking to continue that. You were looking, honestly, to get into the divisional race. The Atlanta Falcons, even though at 9-1, if you were able to get a victory, you would only be two games, obviously, behind them in the loss column. So that was the backdrop for this game at Raymond James Stadium, and obviously for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it would be a football game that would be a back-and-forth game. And a game in which the Atlanta Falcons actually controlled the ball and controlled the clock for a lot of the first half, including their opening drive of the game, as they controlled 7 minutes and 22 seconds of clock time, a 67-yard drive that eventually would culminate with a Matt Bryant field goal to lead the game 3-0. But then the Bucs would get the ball first, would move the ball down the field for their fifth opening drive touchdown of the season. It would be an 81-yard drive in 10 plays, pretty methodical by the Buccaneers, and the drive included a couple of big passes, one of them 21 yards to Dallas Clark, another one to Tyquan Underwood for 22 yards. Eventually, the Bucs get inside of the 10-yard line, eventually get a second and goal at the one, and here's what happened next.
Trouba checks in as an eligible receiver, probably primarily a blocker. And Nate Byam is in motion, another tight end. Bucs will run the toss pitch to the left side. Doug Martin tries to get outside. 3-2-1! Touchdown, Tampa Bay! Doug Martin does it again! His eighth touchdown of his young career. And the Bucs lead 6-3. Fire the cannon!
Yes, indeed. They had the signs yesterday, not only with Go Bucs, but Fire the Cannons. Only appropriate that Doug Martin would cap off that 81-yard touchdown drive with that one-yard touchdown run. So the Bucs now in the lead at this point at 7-3. As we continue through the first half, the Falcons would get back on the board. I mentioned back and forth game on a Jaquizz Rodgers touchdown to lead the game 10-7. Then after the Buccaneers had punted, the Falcons would take over possession near midfield, and the first big play on defense of the day would come from who else but Rondé Barber.
Here's the snap. We run a stunt, get to him, he throws, oh, picked off by Barber. He's got it to the 45, to the 50, outside the numbers right, 40, 35. He's dropped to the 32, and a flag thrown at the line of scrimmage. Rondé Barber picks off the pass, climbed a ladder to do it.
And the flag would be on the Atlanta Falcons, so the penalty declined. Bucs taken over there as Rondé Barber's 47th career interception would set things up with pretty good field position at that point. So the game's first turnover. Unfortunately, it would not result in points. It would result, though, in a spectacular play right away. A little bit into the trick bag for Mike Sullivan and the Buccaneer offense here on this play.
Freeman. Quick out pass to Mark Williams. Up hard of halfback pass to the Vincent Jackson to the 5-3-2-yard line. Razzle dazzle Buccaneers. It's a lateral to Mike Williams, and he throws the bomb to Vincent Jackson. We're in the red zone. Fire the cannon once.
Yes, fire the cannon once is right there in that instance. And again, a wide receiver pass from Mike Williams to Vincent Jackson. It covers 28 yards. Looked like for a half second that Vincent Jackson might be able to get in there inside the 5-yard line. Pretty good throw from number 19, Mike Williams, as well there on the trick play. Unfortunately, the Bucs could not get in the end zone on the subsequent three plays, had to settle for a Connor Barth field goal. That would add up later on, but at that moment it would give the Buccaneers the lead back at that time, or actually tie the game at that time at 10-10. And then the Falcons once again go on another methodical drive. There were not a lot of possessions in the first half. They would chew up the final 3.5 minutes of the first half, and this was interesting. In all of the years having been on the Buccaneers radio broadcast and having watched NFL football, I don't know that I've ever seen a kicker call a timeout, but Matt Bryant called the timeout himself, looking over the Bucs field goal block unit, and then stepped out and seemed to clearly be rattled trying a 22-yarder at the end of the first half.
Good snap, good hold, and Bryant's kick is no good. He missed it wide to the left. My goodness, that's a huge stop by the Buccaneers.
It was a huge stop, as Mean Gene was calling it. So the Falcons come up empty there. The game is 10-10 at that point. And then to start the second half, Buccaneers would get the opening kickoff, would move the ball down the field once again, completing a couple of passes, one to Dallas Clark for 13 yards, a deep one to Vincent Jackson for 31 yards. Ultimately, though, it ends in a Connor Barth field goal to retake the lead once more from 42 yards out at 13-10. Mentioned it was a back-and-forth game. Atlanta hits the big play that you probably have all seen and heard about by now to Julio Jones. An 80-yard touchdown puts them back in front at 17-13. But then a drive late in the third quarter of this game would commence with about 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. Bucks again get a big pass play to Tyquan Underwood, get another one to Vincent Jackson, get another one underneath to Vincent Jackson for 12 more yards. Eventually, at the start of the fourth quarter, they would retake the lead again right here on the goal line.
You got some beef in there for the Buccaneers, who have it first down and goal from a yard away, less than a yard. Josh Freeman in the Bucs offset eye formation. Doug Martin will take the call, running left to the top of the line. He goes over. It's a touchdown, Tampa Bay. Martin's got a pair today.
And Doug Martin's second touchdown run put the Bucs back up 20-17. It also means that Doug Martin now has the rookie record for most rushing touchdowns by a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. That was his eighth rushing touchdown already this season, with still several games left to go. And then would come another key sequence. Falcons back on offense. They're able to get a first down. It's now 3rd-and-1 near midfield with about 12 minutes to go in the game, and the Buccaneer defense would come up big once again.
Shotgun formation, Matt Ryan. Here's the snap. Ryan looking. Here comes pressure. He's hit. He fumbles the ball. It's recovered by the Buccaneers. Fingers clobbered Matt Ryan and knocked the ball away. Buccaneer football on a quarterback sack. Blitzing corner. Knocked Matt Ryan cuckoo.
Great call there from Gene, as again, Ryan didn't seem to see E.J. Biggers at all, even though it was off of his right side, not his blind side. And Biggers not only was able to deliver the hit for his first quarterback sack of his career, but was able to cause the fumble recovered there by Gerald McCoy at the Atlanta 36-yard line. And the Buccaneers in business with the ball, with the lead, with 11 minutes to go. Unfortunately, again, this would be kind of one of the themes of the second half, where you've done good things, but you couldn't put the ball in the end zone. The Buccaneers throw three incompletions on the next three plays. Actually, only one short completion to Mike Williams. They move the ball to the 30, so that would set up this long field goal attempt from Connor Barth.
Here's the snap, a little low. Good hold by Keenum. The kick has got plenty of leg, and it is good! Bucks are up a half dozen, 23-17.
All right, again, at that point, it makes the game 23-17 as Connor Barth's field goal capped off that little brief possession for the Buccaneers. Now, the Falcons get the ball back. I obviously got down the field on a screen pass to Jaquizz Rodgers, later a pass to Julio Jones, eventually a touchdown to Michael Turner that made the game 24-23. And then one of the interesting parts of this game, again, a back-and-forth second half, back-and-forth fourth quarter. Buccaneers have the ball. They're able to start moving it again, down by one with about 6 minutes to go in the game. Couple of completions, one to Mike Williams, one to Dallas Clark for 22 yards. Buccaneers get into the fringe area of about the 38-yard line, throw an incompletion on third down to Tyquan Underwood, and now it was decision time about, do you punt the ball there in that situation? Do you try the long field goal in that situation to go back up by 2 points? Do you try to go for it in that situation to keep possession and maybe get a touchdown? The Bucs would try the field goal with Connor Barth, officially a 56-yarder that was no good, wide to the right, and Atlanta would end up with possession of the ball. And again, in the back and forth, Falcons would move down. Buccaneers were burning timeouts there at the end of this game, and eventually Matt Bryant would miss a field goal in the waning seconds, so the Bucs would get one last gasp here at a Hail Mary at the conclusion of the game, attempting for the win.
From the 48, Freeman shotgun, here's the snap, final play of the game. Pressure coming, rolls to his left, he's going to throw the ball upfield, he's got the long arm into the end zone, it is the incomplete pass in the end zone. Freeman gave the Bucs a chance, but we could not make the catch in the end zone. 7 Falcon defenders in the area, and Atlanta hangs on to win 24-23.
And again, a back-and-forth, hard-fought battle, a disappointing conclusion there at 24-23. And with the highlights done and concluded, we say hello and good evening to the head coach, Greg Schiano. This, as I was just saying, a battle. I know you've had time now to look at it here over the last day. What's an opening thought or two about the way your team fought against Atlanta?
Well, I was proud of the way the guys played. I mean, they played the whole game as hard as they could. We made some mistakes that, unfortunately caught up with us a little bit. And I say we, I mean all of us, coaches, players, we all, there's plays that we wish we could take back. And when you play a good football team like the Atlanta Falcons, you really don't have much margin for error. And I was proud of the way the guys battled, though, and right down to the very last play.
We talked in the build-up to this game that there were going to be some moments, some opportunities for big play. There were a lot of big plays on both sides of this game. Now that you've had some time to look at it and analyze it, it was not solely decided by the big plays, but there certainly were several opportunities for you guys to make one, or they were able to make one, and sometimes that's how it goes in the NFL. If they make one more or you make one more, that's how it goes, right?
Well, you're right. And if before the game – someone said, look, you'll be winning 20-17 with 11:45 in the fourth quarter, and you'll just have hit the quarterback and got a sack fumble on their 37-yard line, I probably would have signed up for
it. If I was selling that, you'd have paid for it.
Probably would have.
Yeah.
And, we had every opportunity, and what we need to figure out is how do we get that little bit more without assuming that, you don't go into the next game and it starts at that spot. You got to re-earn every bit of it, and I'm confident that our guys will do that in their preparation this week, and that we'll go out there and raise it just a notch there to help us win in Denver this week.
All right, that's the head coach, and we will have more on Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Greg Schiano. It's brought to you by the International Diamond Center, where you'll find better selection and value guaranteed. We're going to take your phone calls coming up as well, and we will talk Denver Broncos. Stay with us. This is the Buccaneers Radio Network. We are back here with the head coach on this Monday night, and we will be taking your phone calls coming up. You can dial us up at 990-4620 if you're in Hillsboro. If you're in Pinellas, 727-461-4620. Toll-free 1-800-596-BUCKS, 1-800-596-2827, and we will get your phone call in if you're outside the Tampa Bay area, wherever you're able to hear the show tonight, and we'll get to your calls here coming up in a couple of moments. If you cannot wait on hold, you cannot get through, and you want to tweet a question, you can do that at Buck Sideline Guy, B-U-C, Buck Sideline Guy, and we'll pass along questions and comments. Couple of more on the Falcon game before we move on. We saw a play after Rondé Barber's interception all the way back in the first half where Mike Williams was throwing the ball to Vincent Jackson. You went kind of, as I said a little while ago, into the trick bag there for a play like that. It comes oh so close to getting into the end zone, but I wonder, now that you've had time to take a look at that play and analyze it, what are your thoughts on how effective that play was?
Well, it was a good play. I mean, it was a chunk of yardage that we gained after a sudden change, so that's always good. Sure, the perfectionist in me wants to complete it and get into the end zone. That's the way we design it, but the ball was slightly underthrown, so Vince had to wait on it for a little bit, and that gave the safety a chance to get back over the top. But, again, we get it down inside the five-yard line, and that's a big chunk.
One of the things that's rather obvious on this part of it is that the first thing is you want to complete the pass. Make sure that you don't overthrow it, throw it out of bounds. That's the first thing. But, I mean, short of that, you'd love to have a touchdown. But the important emphasis is it's a big play only if the pass is completed. Make sure you complete it, right?
Well, if a player's thinking about that, he's probably going to struggle a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just want him to trust his training, go out. We've practiced the play for several weeks and go out and throw it and catch it. That's what we do. You start thinking of all the results, that's when you get in trouble.
As a head coach, when you know a play like that is coming and you're standing there for a half second, this is why we love Total Access, what are you thinking? We may have them here. When you know that that's in the possibility, are you excited?
Well, anytime you call a shot, whether it's a trick play or it's a deep ball down the field and you know it's coming, first of all, you're hoping for the right coverage. And then when you get it, then you got a shot. And, that's all coming from upstairs, because they can see it first. We got it. And then when the play starts, what you hear on the headset is he's wide open, and then you wait for the roar or the ooh, but it was good execution. not perfect. If it was perfect, it would be a touchdown, but it was pretty close.
Later on in this game, another big play from your defense, the sack fumble from E.J. Biggers. Again, having looked at the coach's tape, him coming off the edge, it's his first career sack at that moment. Just talk a little more about that play and that turnover.
Well, it was a big play. You know, like I told you earlier, you know, it's the fourth quarter. We're winning by three, and we get the ball on their side of the field. EJ did a great job of disguising the blitz and coming at the last second. I don't think the whole secondary did. And certainly you get a blindside hit there. You know, we don't talk about sacks. We talk about sack fumbles. That's all we want. If you have a chance to sack the quarterback, you want to get the ball out of his hand. And EJ did a great job of that.
All right, and you know, one more moment. We asked you this about this after the game, and you know, second guessing goes on all the time with everything in sports. But in the waning moments of the game, you had a decision to make about: do we try a long field goal? Do we punt? Do we go for it? And in the end, the long field goal is not good. Again, take me through your thought process there, where you're weighing everything, and you're down by one at that moment.
Well, you know, it's not an easy decision because you're right on the cusp there. It's a 37-yard line, 38-yard line. You know, that's right on the edge of where pregame we said, hey, you know, Connor's good from here. This will be his out, you know, his limit. And we had a slight wind coming off the ship, coming, you know, what would it be, north to south, I guess.
Correct.
And we felt good that it was a good, you know, good shot for him. Not an easy one, but a good one. And, you know, and that to me is why you do it, because you believe in your kicker. And, you know, the other option is you punt the ball down and hopefully you can hold them, you know, but there's no guarantees. You're at the 37. So if you get a good punt and it's inside the 10, great. If you mishit it the least bit, now it's a 17-yard net gain, right? Because it goes to the 20 and you're, you know, when you have a kicker like we do, to me, that's a weapon. And if you're not using that weapon, then you're wasting that weapon. And I have faith. You know, he's done it before, and I truly believe he's going to do it again for us in big ways over the next, you know, coming years. And I believe in our kicker. So I would do the same thing again. Hopefully the result would be different, but I felt like at the time that was the call.
All right, so there you go on some of those fronts. And we will get now to your phone calls. Again, 990-4620. And if you're in Pinellas, 727-461-4620. And toll-free, 1-800-596-BUCKS. We begin with Tommy. You are up first here with head coach Greg Schiano on the Buccaneers Radio Network. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, how you doing, coach? It's Tommy from Jersey.
How's it going, Tommy?
All right, not too bad. I just want to apologize. I couldn't make the game this weekend. I actually had to watch it. I was watching it home. We couldn't make the trip this weekend, but it was a really good game to watch. You know, ups and downs. But you made the right choice in that field goal attempt, I think, because it's going to give your kicker the confidence too to go out to say the coach trusts me to make these, and I'm going to start putting them through, and those field goals will start to turn into touchdowns. So. Keep the boys active this week. Go out to Denver, come back with the win, and I'll see you for the Eagle game. Okay, you guys stay well. Thank you for taking the call every week. It's nice.
Thank you for calling, Tom, and I hope everybody up in New Jersey's fighting their way back from the storm and putting it all back together again.
All right, we move on to Bill in Sarasota. You are next here with us with head coach Greg Schiano. Hey, Bill.
Hey, coach, great call on making that long. We're trying to make that long field goal attempt. The way I looked at it, if we make it, we probably win the game. If you punt the ball and they start down the far end of the field, they could eat up a lot of the clock, and maybe we don't get the ball back at all. So I think you called a brilliant game. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Bill, for the kind words. I appreciate it. You know, when you get in those situations as a coach, you just have to do what you believe is right. There's no right or wrong answer in some of those situations. And, you know, when you believe in your players, then you try to let them go play.
All right. And, you know, one more on that point, because it's fourth and about seven. Was there a lot of thought, if at all, about we might try to go for it and run a play? Or was it strictly in your mind, we're either going to pooch punt it or we're going to try the field goal?
Well, you know, what I try to do is always look at all the options. So certainly it was considered, but not for very long. I didn't think that was one of the better ones. But, you know, you got to be careful that you don't think in a manner that just, you know, this or that. You want to, if you can, as a head coach, be thinking of all the different things you can do and then choose what you think is best. And I think it's easy to go with what you think of first, but it's not always what you think of first is best.
It's also why coaches go through Maalox and other antacids after the game and during the week and whatever, trying to figure those things out. Back to the phones. Here is Marcus in Plant City here on the Buccaneers Radio Network. Hey, Marcus.
Hey, what's going on? How you doing, Coach Yano?
I'm doing great, Marcus. How are you?
That's good. I'm pretty good. Hey, I just want to, you know, congratulate the staff on both sides, defense and offense. Y'all doing a good job of calling the games, making decisions. And I just got a question. After a tough loss like this, you know, by 1 point, we fought hard down to the wire. What do you do to prepare these guys to get this off their mind and get ready for the next game?
Well, Marcus, what we try to do is just come in and evaluate the tape honestly with each other, you know, and you ask the players and you ask the coaches to just, put the pride on the shelf and look at things and say, okay, how are you going to get better for our next game, you know, out at Denver? And I think we did that today. I know we did. And I know that, we learned some things like you always do through viewing the game. And now the important thing is our guys get rested up. A lot of them, you know, tomorrow's their day off. A lot of them will be in for some therapy and some different things. And we got to get our bodies feeling well. At this point in the season, it's as much, you know, staying mentally and physically as fresh as you can, because, you know, you're getting on the back end of the season and guys are banged up a little bit.
We said this, and at the risk, I don't want to seem like here that I'm cheerleading on this one, but it's the truth. When you were winning games, and we sat here and talked about it, and you said, put it behind you, move on to the next opponent. It is no different when you lose a tough game, and that's what we've been talking about. Put it behind you as best you can and move on, right?
It is. I mean, it's harder. There's no doubt. It's harder to put it behind you when you lose a game. At least for me, it is. But you got to do it. And like I've said many times, the great thing about our sport and my job is that there's an opponent waiting for you 6 days from now. And you need to get the plan together. You need to get the guys feeling well again. You need to practice that plan, you know, prepare for it, and then you need to go play it. And if you take at any moment, you know, take some time to sit there and feel sorry for yourself when you lose, or any time to sit there and gloat when you win, you're taken away from your preparation for your next opponent. So, we do just what you said. We go through our procedure, our post-game wrap-up, and then we click it and switch gears right to our next game. And in this case, it's quite a challenge on the road at Denver.
Is it reassuring, not that you don't want to win every game, and I know it was a few weeks ago, but you had a tough loss to New Orleans at home, and a few days later had to be on a plane and play a Thursday night at Minnesota and played a complete four-quarter game. Is that reassuring as a coach that you've already done that once this year? Not saying that it translates automatically, but you've seen it once this year. Is that reassuring for you about this team at this point?
Well, I just think the way this team has come ready to play each week is what's the reassuring thing. You know, you hit on the head. Just because you did it once doesn't give you any better chance to do it again. But what I do take confidence in is that each week these guys have prepared and they're ready to play. We haven't won every game, but that's obvious. But we've been in and we've played hard and competitively in every game. And that's what we need to make sure that, you know, this league's all about giving yourself a chance to win in the fourth quarter. And I think we've done that, and we need to make sure that we're able to close them out in the fourth quarter.
Again, we will take your phone calls at 990-4620. If you're in Pinellas, 727-461-4620, and toll-free 1-800-596-BUCKS. Mark is in Tampa. You are next on the Buccaneers Radio Network. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Coach. How you doing?
Doing great, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I just want to say you're doing a great job, and I'm not scared of any team that we face with you, the way you guys have been doing. But I have a question, Coach, and all the teams do it, but they defer to the second half to get the ball, and I'm just wondering if we get our offense to get that ball first, warmed up quicker, they get in the game quicker, and I just wonder what the reasoning is. I know there must be a good reason. That's just my question, Coach.
Well, there's a few reasons, I think. You know, probably the biggest one being that offensively, when you defer, if you win the toss, you get that ball coming out of the locker room to start the second half. And by that time, you've kind of seen what their plan is and how they're going to attack you defensively. So I think, you know, to have that ball when you have a better idea of what you're going to face is an advantage. And, you know, what our guys, especially, you know, in the weather that we're playing in, it's pretty easy to stay warm and stay ready. And you know, those guys have, I think our offense has done a pretty good job all season long, you know, hitting it pretty fast in the first series. So we need to keep doing that. That's for sure. It gives us a good jump start every game, but we have deferred, and there's some reasons that we would take the football, which I'm not going to share because I don't want to give away our hand, but when those come up, then we could talk about them afterward on the show.
Well, this is an interesting point, though, deferring or not. Yesterday was the fifth time this year when you've gotten the ball on your first possession, whether it was the first possession of the game or the second possession of the game, that you've gone ahead and scored a touchdown. So the logical question is, why are you having so much success at the beginning of the game, where, as you mentioned, you haven't had a chance to look at what the defense is doing during the course of the game? Because that's a great, I mean, that's a great stat so far in the first 11 games, that five times on the opening drive you've gotten six.
That is, and if you look, we've had some really good first possessions of the second half.
That's
when
right.
We come out. So I think both of those, you know, what happens at halftime often is Mike and Sullivan and the offensive staff, after going over everything, will talk to the players about, okay, this is how we're going to get this thing started, and this is how we're going to open it up and be ready for this, this, and this. And certainly when you open the game, you have, you know, what we call our openers. And sometimes it's a true script, and other times it's kind of, we just have favorite plays that we're going to hit in the openers. But you lead into the game with your walkthroughs and your meetings, where you go over those probably more than any other play. And that's probably one of the reasons, comfort level with it.
There was one stretch, I believe it ended with the, let me think now, the win over San Diego, where four of the five games in that stretch, you scored on a touchdown on the first possession of the second half as well. And again, this was the fifth time in 11 games where you scored a touchdown on the opening drive of the game for your offense. So that speaks to that exact point. All right, again, if you're on the phones, hang on. We're going to talk more about the Denver Broncos. Stand by for that. They're the opponent Sunday. That is a 4 Eastern time kick in the Mile High City. We're on the air at 3 o'clock, and we'll have more with head coach Greg Schiano on Buccaneers Total Access. That is brought to you by the International Diamond Center, where you'll find better selection and value guaranteed. This is the Buccaneers Radio Network. All right, we are back here on this Monday with the head coach. We'll talk more about the Denver Broncos. We'll get your phone calls here coming up in just a couple of moments. Coach, there are a lot of fans that are just joining us, just getting off from work. I know that you announced earlier in the afternoon at your news conference that Eric Wright has been suspended by the NFL for 4 games. You know, you announced that to the media. What do you want to say about that situation moving forward?
Well, just what I said, you know, earlier today. I'm disappointed that that's the situation. You know, unfortunately, this has kind of become a little bit of an epidemic around the league, and it's certainly affected our locker room on 2 occasions. So, but as in any other situation, when you lose a guy, it's no different than having an injury. You got to make a plan and execute that plan, and we will do that. And our young corners have all been stepping up and playing, and now it's just more opportunity. As I always tell the players, one man's kind of downside is another man's opportunity, and I'm sure these guys will take good advantage of it. And, you know, unfortunately, Eric was unable to play this week because of injury, so we got a little look at what it's going to be like without him, and now we'll just keep rolling.
Say something about guys like Laquan Lewis, like Danny Gore, along with Leonard Johnson, who we've been seeing, because those are guys now that, along with E.J. Biggers, that you're going to be counting on for these next 4 games at least.
No doubt, and you throw Myron Lewis in that mm-hmm. too. You know, as the 5 corners that we have right now, and then you know, Anthony Gator will be back a week from now. So you know, we have some young guys that are, you know what, they're battling their tails off, and they're really trying to do things the way they're coached. And we just need to get a little bit better, and we will.
All right, back to the phones. Here is Mike, who I am told is in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Here we go with Buck fans that are all over the place. Mike, you're on with head coach Greg Schiano.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I've lived in Colorado Springs for 12 years, and I've never been to a Broncos game, but I'm going to be there in my number 5 jersey. So go Bucks. And I just wanted to ask Greg Schiano about if he had given any thought to maybe using LeGarrette Blount and Doug Martin in the backfield at the same time.
Well, Mike, that's a good question. Thanks. I appreciate you coming out to support us this week, and we're going to do everything we can to let you celebrate in that number 5 jersey. But You know, we have given it some thought, actually, and it might be something you see down the road. Who knows? You know, it would be a specialty kind of situation, but right now LeGarrette's our backup running back, and he's ready to roll when we need him. And you know, with Doug being as productive as he's been, we're it's not as quite as easy to get him in there. But I know LeGarrette's staying ready, and he will be ready when his number's called.
You know, a lot of times for fans, and I'm not trying to belittle what they know or what they understand, because a lot of fans understand a lot about the game, but the running back position and the fullback position are different positions. Elaborate on responsibilities. It's not as if you would just suddenly on Sunday decide, hey, LeGarrette, go in and play fullback. It is much more complicated than that, yes?
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, it's different skill set because they're asked to do different jobs. So, you know, but there are certain things that teams do with two kind of running back types in the game at the same time. We have not done that. We have it in our playbook, and we're capable of doing that, so it may come up.
Fred is in Brandon next with us here on the Buccaneers Radio Network. Hey, Fred.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, Coach, I want to just start by telling you how proud I am of the Bucs and how hard you guys are playing. Y'all have pulled rabbits out of hats all year long. We're seeing that, but I know it comes down to leadership on the field and on the sideline and effort by players. That said, I have a pretty good feeling going into Denver. I think there could be some surprises in store. And a question I had for you, though, looking ahead, I noticed Roscoe Parrish in fielding punts, with the exception of one time yesterday, and in the Superdome, or not in the Superdome, the Metro, the Minnesota's field earlier this year, I haven't seen him had any trouble fielding punts. But he had trouble that night, almost on all of them. And I'm wondering if with games in Atlanta and New Orleans coming up in the Superdome and Georgia Dome, if y'all maybe plan to go out and let them do some fielding at the Trop.
Interesting.
Well, it's a good point, Fred. And, you know, we used to do that at other places I've been. And I really, you know, it's something that I'm probably need to talk with Roscoe about. You know, if he was a younger guy, I would say probably absolutely. But Roscoe's a veteran guy who's caught punts in every kind of arena imaginable, but maybe it will. If he feels it's something that'll help him, we'll certainly try to make that happen.
Just on this point again, whether you're playing in a dome or yesterday, I mean, that was a bright sun, and at times it was a wicked sun as it was starting to set. Just take me through. Your guys are in pregame. Your guys are at halftime constantly. You know, the punt returners, the kick returners, checking the conditions, checking to see if the sun's going to be in your eyes or in the dome stadium before the game, halftime. You know, where are the lights? That is an important part of what they're doing in that role, right?
Well, it is, and that's why, you know, people think guys just go throw the ball around in warm-ups and stuff. I mean, you have your pre-warm-up, and then you have the whole team come out. But in the pre-warm-up, those are things that our position coaches work with their players to check on, you know, little things like where will the sun be. You know, the sun may be here during warm-ups, but when we're playing and we're trying to win the game in the fourth quarter, it's going to be over here, and you're going to be looking. And that's things that that I take into account when we decide if the wind is kind of – not real strong either direction. Okay, then how do we want, where will the sun be? Do we want to be looking into the sun? Do we want to be playing defense looking into the sun? You know, those are all things that you take into account. And little things, you know, little things that quarterback's got to make sure he knows where the play clocks are. And that sounds like something. Well, why wouldn't he know? Well, if you don't go check it out, at least the first time you look for it, you may not be able to find it immediately. And you can't be under center and hesitating with things like that. So we go through a whole checklist of things in pregame that the players and the coaches have to, you know, check off and make sure that we're aware of.
Yeah, and for fans that maybe don't know this about different NFL stadiums, the play clocks might sometimes be up under the scoreboards up high, or they might be down low by the end zone, or they might be in both. So, it's one of those things that you do have to figure out, because it's not uniform across the NFL as to exactly where they are. A question on Twitter, and again, you can tweet me at Bucks Sideline Guy with questions or comments. Daniel wants to know, Coach, is there a chance that we could see Rondé Barber move to defensive back if needed later in the year? Thanks. Beat Denver this week. So,
you know what? I'd rather not. You know, I think what he means when he says defensive back, move him to corner,
right,
back to his old position. I think Rondé's doing a great job at safety and one that we really need him there. So I don't think that's in the cards. But the nice thing is you have a guy that's capable if you ever had to as an emergency corner.
Steve says, please tell the coach that fans in Venice, we were all at the game yesterday, are proud of the foundation. It's the Denver season. on to the Denver season. So there's Steve and the fans in Venice, about an hour and a half, 2 hours to the south.
Couldn't say it better myself, Steve. I love it.
All right. Dave is in Tampa. You are next on the phones here with head coach Greg Schiano. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Coach, how are you doing?
Doing well. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing great. A little sad today. You know, Mondays after a Bucks loss are never a happy day here. But, it was a great game. The atmosphere in the stadium was amazing. And it's really nice to bring that back to Tampa. The atmosphere, although they said it wasn't a sellout, maybe a couple of days before, that place was rocking yesterday. And I'm sure all the coaches and players noticed it. My question was, we were debating this at the time, as a coaching decision. We play Monday morning quarterback in the office today. First and 10, we missed the field goal, the long field goal. And then first and 10, I think they run for about 4 yards. There's about 2 minutes. There's actually the same amount of time on the play clock as there's left before the two-minute warning. And you elect not to take a timeout. And so we lose that time. They ended up getting that first down, and we utilized the timeouts on the other end. What's the strategy? And it's always, I always like to hear a coach's perspective on when you use timeouts and you incorporate them around the two-minute warning. How do you play that, and would it even have mattered? To me, if you play it on the front side, well, then they can run a play clock all the way down on the back side of the two-minute warning, and would it have really mattered, or in hindsight, would you have maybe taken it before the two-minute warning, and just kind of your thoughts on that play?
Well, Dave, those are good questions. First of all, I appreciate your support, and I agree with you. The stadium was rocking yesterday, and it was awesome to have our fans, really make a home field advantage, something we've been talking about since we arrived. I thought that was excellent. The clock there at the end, that two-minute warning is, I've told people, they say, what's one of the biggest differences, from coming back from, the collegiate ranks back to the NFL? Two-minute warning, I think, is an undervalued skill, managing the time, because it's an additional timeout if you use it correctly. And when we had them second and six, the thinking is that we're going to do what we're supposed to do and then have our timeouts after we stop them on third down and then have a good, we want to go two-minute warning. We want to get the ball back, and we want to do a two-minute drill to kick a field goal and win without giving them the ball back and have Matt Ryan have one of his last-minute heroics. So you try to kind of plan it out. The problem we ran into with the little snafu was on third and whatever it was, third and three or four, they complete that slant. It was more than that. It was third and six. I think they complete that slant past, and that wasn't what we were planning on. So then we had to regroup, and, we knew we would be able to, if we could stop them, we knew we'd have minimal amount of time, somewhere between 10 and 14 seconds, depending how the clock was stopped. And that's just what we got it back. We got it back with 12 seconds and did our best to try to get it down. So in hindsight, if you use them to four, maybe, but if they complete that first down, then you don't want to use it. And it's, catch as catch can. The thing that you really need to do is you can't take the football out of the decision. How do you feel you're playing? How do you feel they're doing? If you go right off a chart, there is definitely mathematical things to do, but do you think you're going to stop them? I had every bit of confidence that we'd stop them on the third down and get the ball back and have just about enough time to do what we wanted to do and still not give them time. So best laid plans, kind of went awry there, but we spend an awful lot of time dealing with those situations, and that's good. That's critical time in the game.
One thing that I know you're also contemplating is if we get it back, I want, if I can, to have a timeout left. And that's part of it, too, that's going through that thought process as you're getting close to the two-minute warning, because you mentioned you're going to have the automatic stop. So that was another thing that you were probably thinking of. And then I thought of this because I'm sure second-guessers in the water cooler in Atlanta are talking about the last minute of the game where Mike Smith actually chose to throw the ball where you didn't have a timeout left, where if that's incomplete, there's 45 or 50 seconds left in the game. Just in generic terms, this is what head coaches have to do in the last 2 minutes, to think about these things. What happens if this doesn't work? What happens if I use my timeout here? It's part of the strategy at the end of the game, right?
Well, there's no doubt. And, like you said, throw the ball there. If it's complete, man, what a gutsy call. Mm-hmm. If it's incomplete, how could you do that? That's the way that head coaches live, and that's okay. I mean, you got to do what you think's right at the time, and you hope that it all plays out, but, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it doesn't.
Here is Ed in St. Pete. You are next with us. We got time for maybe one or two more calls. Ed in St. Pete on the Buccaneers Radio Network. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Coach. Great show, TJ. Great job you're doing with the team, Coach. And I love the excitement. You know, it's like old puck ball. And I was wondering if you looked at any tapes, you know, of the previous Bucks players, but we had a favorite, Allstott. And there was a little saying, you're in good hands with Allstott, because they would do a little screen pass, and once you got Allstott running for 5 yards before anybody could get to him, he would just blow through him. And I think we got you're in good hands with Muscle Hammy. I'll sit back and listen, but yeah, it would be great to see him get like a screen pass. I think he'd be great.
Well, Ed, I couldn't agree more. You know, and I have watched old Buck tape, and I'll tell you, when I did it all through my years as a collegiate coach, I used to come up here and visit and watch both the offense and the defense. I'd be lying if I said I didn't watch a heck of a lot more of the defense, but I was a big fan and always followed the Buccaneers because I love the way that that they played, you know, back in the late 90s.
Well, you coached against Mike Allstott as a secondary coach with the Bears, so you would have gone against him too in that instance, right?
I'll go better than that. I coached against him as a secondary coach with Penn State when we played at Purdue.
Mm.
Yeah, so I've coached against him in college and in the National Football League, and he was a pain in the rear to go against. I could tell you, you don't want to be on the other side of that, you know, that battering ram.
And then the screen pass stuff to Doug Martin, you obviously had a touchdown against the Minnesota Vikings on that. You had a big play against San Diego on a catch and run on essentially what was a screen. And you used him even a couple of times there yesterday. You had one called back actually because of a penalty where you got a 40-plus yard play to Doug Martin. But he's, I mean, if you've watched him at Boise State and watched him with this team, he can catch the football out of the backfield, obviously, Coach.
There's no doubt. Doug's a complete running back. He can run the ball. He can pass protect. He can catch the football. And screen is a good play because Doug kind of loses himself. Because of his height, he can get lost behind some of those big linemen, and then he just kind of pops out into the open, and he's off to the races. So, you know, we have a lot of ways that we like to use Doug, and we just got to make sure that that we're keeping him healthy and keeping him upright by blocking for him.
Time for one more. Jerry in Venice, speaking of Venice a little while ago here on the show, you're on with head coach Greg Schiano on the Buccaneers Radio Network. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Coach, New Jersey boy, but I got a question here. Number 34, Michael Smith, running back, was doing very well in preseason, running the kickoffs back, and haven't seen him since, and I was wondering what happened to him.
Well, Jerry, that's a great question, and he's on our squad. He has not been active, I think, since week one. But I agree with you. I was very impressed and am still very impressed. You should see the way he practices and the way that he works at it. He's a great guy to have on this football team. And I do think his time's coming. I do think that this is that Mike's a guy that's going to help us down the road and is helping us now in practices, but is going to help us down the road in games. So just hang on. I think we're going to get to see him one of these days.
All right, good enough. We will pause here. We'll talk a little more Denver Broncos in a moment with Buccaneers head coach Greg Schiano. It's Buccaneers Total Access, brought to you by the International Diamond Center, where you'll find better selection and value guaranteed. This is the Buccaneers Radio Network. Back in here with the head coach on this Monday night, and the Denver Broncos now up next in Denver at what is now Sports Authority Field at Mile High. It's not even the same stadium anymore, so we can't call it Mile High Stadium, but that's what they call it now. And it'll be the Buccaneers' first trip into Denver since 2008. And Peyton Manning and the Broncos await. So obviously, let's begin right there. They've obviously had a tremendous resurgence with their pass game with Peyton Manning. What do you see out of Denver and the passing attack with Peyton Manning at the helm?
Well, I've not got too deeply into them. You know, it's mostly been cleaning up yesterday's game, but I have watched them some, and he is as advertised. I mean, he is something special. You know, you better make sure you're on your game, because if you're not, he will carve you up.
Well, and it's interesting how the world works out, because he didn't play at all last season, and earlier in the year he was maybe struggling some trying to get healthy, But in watching Denver, they are running all kinds of different things with him looking like the Peyton Manning of old. Is that a fair assessment on him?
I think that's very fair. And like the real good Peyton Manning of old.
Got to try to get after him. What else for a couple of their weapons? I know they lost Willis McGahee in the backfield. They used Noshon Moreno some, the kid out of Georgia. And if I'm not mistaken, that's a New Jersey high school kid. You're nodding with me. You're smiling. Mm-hmm. You know about Noshon from years ago, right?
I have been in Noshon's home, yes. He was one that got away.
You had a guy named Ray Rice, though, around that time, too, if I recall.
You are right.
That, in the backfield there, they have Hillman. They have him there with the running backs. But what about the Denver run game a little bit?
Well, you know, they're going to run the football, but certainly the thing that is the key is Peyton. You know, he's going to be, you know, with the loss of Willis McGahee, I'm sure that even more so Peyton becomes the main character in the whole deal. So they're going to run it, but it's really, you know, they're going to run it enough that keep you honest so Peyton can make his throws.
Defensively for them, they have Von Miller, the former number one pick out of Texas A&M. What else stands out off of the Denver defense and the challenge there?
Well, I think a couple of things. Number one, you mentioned Von Miller is an excellent excellent pass rusher, excellent edge player. Elvis Dumervil is just a force that we're going to have to make sure that we know where those guys are and account for them in pass protection. I think you can't ever, you know, forget Champ Bailey's out there, you know, just a tremendous cornerback who, if you're not real careful, he will take the ball away from you. So, you know, they have some real, real top-line players on all three phases, and it's going to be quite a challenge going out there, playing at their place, and one that I can't wait to get after.
Your team has handled the adversity on the road three consecutive times with three consecutive victories. With the understanding, again, that doesn't equal anything come Sunday at 4 o'clock. One of the things that I think has impressed Buck fans the most is the ability to win these games in the fourth quarter on the road, too. Again, that is something that I think you can build on and something that you can look forward to, at least, right on Sunday?
Well, I think our guys trust their training. You know, they believe in what they do in practice and their preparation, and that gives you confidence when you're in those clutch situations. So, you know, it wouldn't shock you if this one is just like all the rest of them, comes down to a drive in the fourth quarter, either stopping them or making it. You know, and that's no guarantees, but that's kind of the way this league is. You know, if you're playing against good football teams and you're playing well, it's going to come down to the end and someone's got to make a play.
That's one of the rocking environments, too, as far as outdoor stadiums at that place. I don't know if in your tenure in Chicago with the Bears, if you were ever at the old Mile High before this stadium was built, but having been there 4 years ago, that, I mean, the place vibrates, too, at times. It will be loud, and you got to be ready to go, right?
Well, I have coached there. We had Monday Night Football there when I was at Chicago, but have not been in the new stadium. Looking forward to it. It looks spectacular, you know, on the overhead shot, so. Once we get in there, though, it's a 120-yard field. We got to go play.
Coach, we will see how it goes there with the Denver Broncos. Thank you for that. All right, it is the Buccaneers Total Access Program with head coach Greg Schiano. It's brought to you by International Diamond Center, where you'll find better selection and value guaranteed, and we will have more in a moment. This is the Buccaneers Radio Network. All right, and that will do it for this edition of Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Greg Schiano. Again, brought to you by the International Diamond Center, where you'll find better selection and value guaranteed. As the Bucs get set to head to Denver, we will be on the air at 3 with kickoff at 4 Eastern Time from the Mile High City against Peyton Manning and the Broncos. We look forward to talking to you then, and we'll talk to you next Monday night with another edition of Buccaneers Total Access with the coach here on the Buccaneers Radio Network.
Been listening to Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Greg Schiano.
Brought to you by International Diamond Center, where you'll find better selection and value guaranteed.
On 620 WDAE St. Petersburg, home of the Buccaneers.